The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners, Stephen Lucan and Tony Payne. Today's topic is a key concern, I think, especially for high-income earners and business owners. It's really an important part of the financial planning process, and a lot of the conversations here, especially this time of the year with our CFPs. So we're going to be hitting the high points for tax bracket management. This is the season, so let's get into it. Going to start with some strategic Roth conversions to manage future RMDs. And I am reading this. I am not a CFP, so I'm going to be lobbing softballs at you, and you guys can answer some questions, some questions that I thought would be relevant for people listening.
Well, I'll kind of jump in then if I can. The tax bracket management, you know, the idea of what we're talking about, hopefully you're managing it. I mean, the idea of it's just what it is how I think a lot of people treat it. And what we're hoping to talk about today is the planning of it. Because if you take steps and look ahead of it, you could manage your bracket rather than here's the bill at the end of the year, here's what I'm stuck with. So I think that's really what we're going
to talk
about.
That's completely foreign to me as somebody kind of twirling around you guys every day. When I was looking up the information and trying to figure out how to sort of present this as a non-CFP, what's relevant and what's not. I've never heard of the term, as in every person. I've never experienced it in conversations with my CPA. So I guess for somebody like me, if I were a potential client sitting in front of you and the subject came up, how would you explain to me what it is, what it means, why it's relevant?
When we talk about tax brackets, it's that dollar you earn, what percentage is being lost to taxes. And the way the tax brackets are set up, some dollars you lose, and I'm talking federal taxes because we'll assume every state is in a different area, but you have state taxes in some states, not all states, but federal, we're talking federal taxes. Some of your dollars are taxed at 10%. After that 10% bucket is taxed, that 10% is full, it goes to the next bucket of 12%. So then the next dollars you earn get taxed at 12%.
Exploded. Yeah.
You have a 10%.
But you have one salary, right?
Full salary. So a portion of that salary is you lose 10% to federal taxes.
Okay.
You fill up that bucket. The next bucket over moves to 12%. So every dollar in that 12%, after 10% is full, it spills into the 12% tax bucket. After the 12% is full, it'll spill into 22%. So that's a big jump. So you lose 22 cents for every dollar. After the 22 cents is filled, 24 cents it goes to. The next one is 32.
I'm going to show my ignorance here for a moment, because I thought it was just you are at 23% or 18% overarching.
No.
I did not realize that.
Right. And what we're doing, though, that's where I think most people are. I mean, the idea of knowing where the progressive tax system is, it's not every dollar is taxed at that amount, that 22%. But like Stephen, you're saying, it's almost a waterfall or bucket approach where once I hit my first bucket, we'll say 10,000, that's that lower one. Then I go up to my next bracket. Well, that's higher. And after that, it's higher. So on that same 100,000 of salary, if I kind of look at that, well, each chunk of that 100,000 could be taxed differently.
You're getting hit three times?
No. It's just once.
Oh, okay.
Right? So that first 10,000 gets taxed at 10%. if you're a single filer.
Gotcha.
Right? After you, that's over. Okay, fine. So now you have, let's say you have 90,000 left over of the 100.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I completely misunderstood what you said.
But it's that next dollar that gets taxed.
I think they want it that way.
Yeah. Right. But again, that's where people get confused. Yeah. Everyone hates taxes. I've never heard somebody say, I'm okay with taxes, regardless of their income level.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I'm saying, okay, you're in the marginal tax bracket of 12%. You hate taxes. I'm like, okay, that's a pretty low tax rate versus someone who's paying 37%. They hate taxes too. That's their marginal rate, meaning that last dollar or the next dollar, what is it getting taxed
at? Got it. I understand now. So, I completely misunderstood what you said.
No, that's fine.
I'm sitting here thinking, are we getting hit three times? That was a blonde moment.
One day we'll be able to show visuals. That'll be a nice thing.
For those of us visuals, who are visual, that would be great. Yeah,
but I explained it as, like I said, buckets that spill over. So each bucket is a different percentage, and once it's filled, it moves into that next bucket, which is a higher tax bracket.
The part where it gets to be not tricky, because you think about having more income is a good thing. It is. You have more.
That's the goal.
Let's not misphrase any of this. Taxes, we know we have to have them. The idea of making more, hopefully, is a positive of that. So, of course, some of that tax bill may be negotiable. And that's what we're talking about here. In a very simple example, you've got a check on 1231. You're retiring the next year. Well, that check is going to be taxed at that whole year's income level. But if you waited until the next day, that next calendar day, well, now you've reset in that bracket you were talking about, Stephen, that 0 to 10,000 and above. Well, that's where that might apply for a single person. So the idea of that, just that simple flexibility, you know, whether or not you could cash the check or not, again, that's a simple example. Mm-hmm. But the idea is if you can shift things around, you're working your brackets.
Yeah. And it's really a great part of the planning. When we talk financial planning, it's not year over year. You're planning for 20 plus years of income during your earning years where you have employment income, even into retirement years where your income comes from your savings. It's a planning process, mm-hmm. and you can do a really good job of squeezing that tax dollar to your advantage, those tax dollars to your advantage. Tony, you brought this up on the radio like 15 years ago, tax diversification.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I thought it was a great term when it comes to investing. Right? And we're going to talk about that, but I love that term.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Stephen's really excited right now.
Oh, yeah. We can talk for hours. Tony and I can talk Stephen for hours.
Did you miss your mark as a CPA? Yeah. I don't know.
No, I guess and no. I love it
enough
to be dangerous.
You're too much of a people person for that.
Right, but thank you. But yeah, like I love it, the fact that you can do more. You can have more impact on your financial plan through tax management than you can through investing. Investing is boring, but taxes is strategic. It's tactical. There's more tactics
in tax. Stressful, overwhelming.
Yeah, but there's more tactics in tax planning than in proper investing.
Wow.
Yeah. Right? And people who day trade will disagree, but day traders are rarely right. But tax planning is a tactical approach, and you can be really successful at it and make it, squeeze it out.
And illustrate that point maybe a little bit. You're a wonderful investor. You did great. You took your money. You took that first dollar. You turned it into $100 million. Wonderful investing. Great skill, like you were saying, Stephen. Yeah. Then you pass away. What happens? With no estate planning, with no good techniques, you're almost giving half of that away to Uncle Sam. So think about all that great investing, all that life's work, all of that to go through. One fell swoop, and there it went, almost half of it. So the idea that investing is important, we can manage that. But it's all these other things to protect what you have. You build that same $100 million and you get sued for something bad. Well, did you have proper insurance? That's where all this connects.
Oh, yeah,
we're exactly talking about taxes today, but the idea that it's all one big connecting puzzle, that's true.
Would you guys say that tax planning is probably the most important part of a financial plan?
They're all important, but the one that, like I said, is more tactical.
Because tax laws change how often?
It's fluid, and you don't know where the future is going to hold. And I have something to talk about today about we don't know where it's going to go, but I have a feeling it's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a hunch.
Yeah. Okay, back to the strategic Roth conversions and managing future RMDs.
Okay.
RMDs meaning required minimum
distribution. That's the amount you have to take out for people age 73 or greater. It will eventually become age 75 or greater. I think 2030. Yeah, year 2030. So a few years out. Seems like forever from now. But
why did they keep pushing the age out?
Well, great question.
Yeah,
people are working longer, and it was part of the SECURE Act, the idea of we want to make people's retirement a little sturdier. Well, that used to be at age 70, you would have to start taking, 70 and a half, you'd have to start taking money out of your IRA, which if you were still working or you didn't have enough in there, they're making you take money out when you're still needing to put money in there. So the idea of stretching it out, putting a couple years back, it hopefully allows for more growth, leaving the money in there a little longer, hopefully having a more sturdy retirement.
Okay, this is a strange question, but is there a relationship, a direct relationship between them pushing the age out for the RMD and Social Security and the condition of Social Security?
No, I don't think there's any correlation there. I think it comes down to the people working longer, and then you would have two dual incomes. You're having money taken out of the IRA, plus you're getting taxed from your working income, and we talked about the progressive tax system.
Yeah.
You're getting slammed now. You're losing 24-32% versus maybe 12%.
Wow.
Right? So it was more about the worker than anything.
Okay. I have a scenario for you.
All right.
Let's say somebody's saved in their 401k, but they're now realizing that their RMDs could push them into a much higher tax bracket in retirement. Does converting to a Roth make sense, or should they wait?
Well, in each scenario, we know it's a little different.
It depends.
Yeah,
right?
It depends. Now, I'll give you why it depends. We'll go a little further today. But again, everyone's situation is a little different. You should be looking and talking to your own advisor, your team, for making your decisions. But generally, when you do a Roth conversion, what we're talking about is taking money that's pre-tax, money that you put into an IRA maybe or a 401k account. And what you're doing is you're converting that into a Roth IRA. So instead of being pre-tax, once you do that conversion, you're paying taxes on that amount. But then that money goes directly into the money that you've converted, goes into that new Roth IRA or an existing one. But then you've paid your tax bill, hopefully separately, not out of the conversion amount, then you have less working for you. So hopefully you were able to write the check for those taxes separate. And now once it's in the Roth, remember the goodies there. There's no required minimum distribution now. And there's also no taxes on any of the growth. So when you convert it or you put it in there, let's say it's $5,000. In 40 years, it becomes $100,000. All $100,000 is yours. No taxes. So that's one of these.
Or your beneficiaries. And that's and that was one of the talking points you mentioned. There's no required minimum distribution from Roth IRAs. That's the one I think they're going to change eventually.
That talk about a goodie.
It is. It's the golden nugget. This Roth IRAs, I think, went back to early 90s, 92 or 93. Senator Roth implemented that or presented that, and they passed it through Congress.
One of the few bipartisan things then. But the idea of, again, go back in time, the idea that pensions were going away. How do we help people save? Well, this is one of those wonderful tools that if you use it and you use it properly, you're getting all that tax-free growth, actually. And then when you take it out, you're able to utilize that money for whatever you want without any penalties. Again, assuming you're of age, but the idea is that money's yours.
Or you pass it off to the next generation. If you have a sound financial plan and you're financially independent, I've talked to many clients where, okay, this money is probably going to go to the next generation.
Specifically the Roth.
Right. Well, both. Any IRA, a Roth IRA, regular IRA, you're prepaying that IRA tax now, letting it grow tax-free. And when, let's assume it's for the kids, when the kids inherit it, they get it in a tax-free manner. Where if they get it in their regular IRA or rollover IRA or 401k, they're going to be paying taxes on that distribution plus their earned income years. You really can get hammered with taxes. So it's basically saying, okay, I'll pay 22% now, and we'll invest it for the next 15, 20 years, and then when I die, I'll pass it on to the kids tax-free.
So if you currently have a beneficiary or inherited IRA, and it's a Roth, and you've been taking RMDs from it to this point, now that that's changed, and you've been paying taxes on it when you take it out,
I think you're confusing.
Oh, I'm sorry. It wouldn't be a Roth, would it?
Well, you can have a beneficiary Roth IRA, but that's from you've inherited it from
that's
a
what
non-spouse.
I mean. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So, say
your parent, your mom dies. I get I open up a beneficiary Roth IRA. I receive her Roth IRA. I have 10-year window to distribute it. I can do it over 10 years. Year one, I could do it, or because it's tax free, I could invest it for 10 years and wait for 10 years.
Tax-free inheritance.
Wow.
It's a neat thing. I mean, again, at least from the income tax side, depending upon how much was in there. And to the topic of the day, bracket management, managing your taxes, that's where that Roth IRA, if you're in retirement, maybe you didn't know what was coming, you needed to have a wedding funded that year, you wanted to take the family on a trip. Well, if your pension, Social Security, RMDs are already pushing you up to that highest tax bracket, well, maybe you would use your Roth IRA in that instance, take out $50,000, $100,000, whatever you might need. And then the next year, I'm going to reset my tax bracket. I can manage it a little different. But it almost acts like your slush fund in retirement be able to raid tax-free, again, according to your plan and when you might need it. But the idea of it's not going to add to my income right now is really neat.
Yeah.
That is great.
It is a wild card. Right. If your analogy is poker, it's a wild card.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. You think that'll change pretty quickly then?
No, I just think the RMDs at some point, though, because a lot of wealth is being accumulated in Roth IRAs. Mm-hmm. Government knows this and they want money in the cycle. Mm-hmm. They want taxes. Mm-hmm. And if it's in a tax-free environment, they're not benefiting from it.
Okay, blending tax-free, tax-deferred, and taxable income streams. So let's say somebody has a mix of retirement accounts. Maybe a 401k, a Roth, taxable, or brokerage account, but they're not sure how to withdraw the money, which that would be me. I would sit here and say, I don't know where to start or which one to pick from first. I think it would be worrisome, obviously pulling from the wrong account and paying more taxes than necessary. So how do you help guide people when they have these varied accounts?
Well, the number one, I'll start with the number one pitfall. So you set up something beautifully. You have a taxable account. You have an IRA or 401k, which is tax deferred, and you have a Roth IRA, which is tax free. That's a perfect scenario. You have three tax categories. The mistake most people make is they drain their taxable account. They'll drain it because I'm just going to use it, because I'm in a low tax bracket. I don't want to pay taxes.
Right.
So they drain it, and then all they have left is a Roth IRA and a rollover IRA or a 401k. And then all of a sudden, you're subject to whatever money you pull out. Mm-hmm. So what you have to do is just balance it and manage the tax brackets and maybe draw a little bit of each of them or two of the three and just manage that, navigate that tax bracket as part of the distribution to fund your
it's a chess game.
But that's why a good financial planner and a good accountant will keep you in the guardrails and minimize it.
Yeah, you can lose a lot of money if you don't do this right.
Yes.
The couple I was meeting with yesterday, we were on this very topic, so it's really relevant, but the idea of you retired and the normal course of action, you might have said, let me turn on my pension, let me start that stream, let me take money out of my 401k. And we were able to go through and talk about, and every case is different, but in this one, had they followed that order of operations, like you said, Stephen, it kind of in reverse, actually, lots of income hitting, and instead, what we did, or they were able to do, was a lot of Roth conversions. Use that beginning tax bracket, like you said, Stephen, that 0 to 10,000 for a single person at least, and at least do some of that. You know, if you're retired, you have no other income, you haven't turned on Social Security, what a great time to do some of these conversions where typically you might say, oh, I'm retired, let me just start my stream or my pension or
which
turn that on.
Which is probably what most people do.
Yeah.
It is. And that, again, just a benefit of being able to plan the distribution strategy. And it's what we do. It's what we work with clients who've been long retired. Each year, though, each year is different depending upon what the goals are, the needs, the money stream, and the taxes at the time. I think you were going to talk about some tax changes, Stephen.
Mm-hmm. For?
Oh, upcoming maybe? Or
no, that was the Roth RMD I teased there, yeah.
And I hear you guys talk a lot about the fact that, and I can attest to this, you always think that when you're in retirement, you're going to spend less, that you're going to need less, and it tends to be the other direction.
Yeah,
right?
so again, the pitfall that I talked to earlier, the one example I had, somebody, all they did was just throw money into 401k. And they threw a lot, and they saved it and built it, and it was a huge account, and they never saved any additional money, which is they have enough, right? But now every time they take distributions from it, they're paying a lot of taxes on it. Again, they still have enough. They're in a great spot, but the house got damaged in a storm. The roof got damaged in a storm. Now they have to pull out money for the repairs, right? Or they need a new car, pull out $20,000, $30,000. They don't want any debt. So you're adding a lot of money and you're paying a lot of taxes on that distribution, and you're sort of at the mercy of your spending habits, and you could lose that money to taxes.
So unless it's in a 401k, there you can't sort of unless you take another job, you can't convert it. Your stock.
Right. Well, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
With the plan the way it is,
the tax status is what it is until you pull
it
out.
Like it's not like you can take the RMD and put it somewhere else to make up for what you did.
No, when it comes out of the account, you're paying taxes. Yeah.
The neat workaround to some of that is some plans may offer a Roth 401k. So when you're saving in the 401k, you're paying taxes on it. But once it's in there, it's growing, it's tax deferred. And it's part of what you were just talking about, the idea that when you retire, your lifestyle may not go down. And typically the thought process with the traditional accounts was, well, if I'm a high income earner today, think $500,000 plus. Well, if I defer this in my traditional IRA, I'm not paying that highest tax rate. Well, if I'm supporting my lifestyle on that income when I'm in retirement, I'm going to need that kind of money anyway. Mm-hmm. Well, now it's coming out and it's being taxed again. Granted, I got the tax deferred growth, but if I had a Roth 401k, that might be a balancing act to say, I'll pay the taxes now, even at the highest tax rate, because if I'm going to be taking out decent money when I'm retired, I may still be at that high tax rate.
Right. Mm-hmm. And at that point, your investment, again, it's the harmony of investing in taxes, where that money, you've paid the taxes even at a high rate, but you've got 20, 30 years of growth. Mm-hmm. That might be to your advantage. Mm-hmm. If you look at how the money can be invested over a 20-year period, that's significant growth too.
I'm becoming a bobblehead over here. What kind of trouble could a retired business owner run into if they pull their money out of a tax deferred account without thinking about the tax hit?
Well, I'll even go before they're retired, even, because a lot of that can happen right at the sale. Depending upon how the sale is structured, you may be, I hate to say giving away, but giving away money as opposed to consulting with someone, having a plan, strategizing maybe a few years in advance of the sale even. That way you structure things so that the cards aren't already laid, they're already dealt, and you're just dealing with what's there. Because if you are that retired business owner and you've sold your business, I hate to say the right way, you're going to have more money. That's
good.
Allow
that's right.
A
that's
bit
your
more.
Goal. If you want, your goal is to sell the business for as much as you can. But it's like hitting the lottery, for lack of a better term. And yeah, you're going to get nailed with taxes. Mm-hmm. But as Tony's saying, is maybe leading up to it, you might be able to find some tax losses, shelter those, and then offset those future gains with the accumulated losses.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, there's a few. You mentioned one of them too. And again, the idea of being mindful of it. Planning ahead. Again,
it's called planning for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're that business owner, you're living it. We talked about this last show, but you're living it. It's hard to take your head up out of the weeds sometimes. Mm-hmm. But the idea of, is this business structured the right way? Should we be an LLC? Should we be this kind of corporation? How are we structured even?
Charitable goals.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe you have family members that are involved, and what a great time to get someone's stock when it's still low and it's growing. That may be part of your plan too, or an incentive to say, let's shift this tax burden instead of them getting it at my income level. Maybe they can own some of this and get dividends at their level.
That was my next question.
Are
you reading my notes?
I was.
So shifting income across family members through trusts or business structures. How does a business owner support their kids financially through the business without creating a tax headache?
I'm going to smile a little bit and say those kids are going to support the business owner. They're going to do it the right way.
That's a great thing. I'm sorry. I'm glad you went 100%.
You put them on the payroll?
First is, you put them on the payroll, but more importantly, you put them to work in the business. Have them work in the business, and then you can pay them and maybe even fund their college through that labor of learning and seeing what business is like. And, you know, there's no free lunch, and that's where just paying a kid because you can. That's dicey, and I don't support that because it's unethical from a tax perspective. Have them work.
Yeah.
Right? And then, you can save a lot of taxes that way.
So stuffing envelopes is not good enough, right?
Well, that starts it, though.
It depends how many hours.
Yeah. I'll share a story.
I was washing pots early on, so scrubbing pots in the dishes. So, I was doing work to a degree. But you got to work, and if they work, you can pay them.
So again,
reduce your taxes. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, this is it. I'll say a fun story, but one of my friends, very good friend, well aware of me talking and listens to the show. So this story won't sound new to him, but the idea of if your family owns all these car dealerships, you've done very well. what's the path? You know, hey, I can just go on vacation my whole life. I could do that. But how do I actually continue this with our family's values, being able to continue a legacy that a great-grandfather started? Well, the idea of when you were in your teens, you were there cleaning cars. You were vacuuming them. You were doing each and every role in that dealership, from washing cars all the way up to driving them around, dropping them off, doing on those trips with each and every part of the workforce, to where now you're running a dealership, you're successful at it, a great chain, a wonderful chain. And part of that is you had to operate in each and every area of the business to really know, how does this work? What are they dealing with? Yep. So I can't think of a greater success story than that, of working every department from the ground up and not having that given to you, like you said.
Yeah.
And then being able to benefit, use that leverage from
that
the family.
That can replace
the right
a college
way.
Degree in its finest form,
sure.
Honestly.
But again, you can earn some income along the way and saves into the 529 plan. But yeah, you can reduce your taxes through paying other family members and as a business owner. But again, it starts with the employment side.
Okay.
Even a spouse.
Let's right. move to real estate. So how do you sell an investment property without losing a big chunk to taxes? And let's give an example. So let's say say a couple sold a vacation home in a rush to free up cash.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't plan for the capital gains tax hit. And they may have lost nearly a quarter of their profit to taxes. One is simple 1031 exchange could have deferred the liability. So let's.
Well, you gave the answer.
So let's explain what that means.
All right, Tony, go ahead.
All right. So.
Because I'm reading letter soup here.
All right.
Okay. I want to learn what this means.
No, so this is neat. So I'm going back to. Remember grade school, Stephen?
Yeah,
I know it was a couple decades ago for us, but. You're sitting there at the lunch table. You've got your baseball cards. You've got your player you like. You're willing to trade it to somebody else. Is there a tax on that? No, you're trading one card for the next card. The 1031 exchange at the simplest level is that. I've got my investment, and that's my card. That may be my property, my family vacation home. Well, if I go through all the right hoops, and there are a lot of hoops, we'll get into that in a second, but you have to jump through the hoops and do the paperwork the right way. But effectively, you traded one card for another. You didn't have any drain from the taxes along the way. Maybe you were buying a different family property. Maybe you were buying another investment asset. There's a couple ways to do it, to structure it so that you're not losing the tax drain along the way. You may still have to pay it eventually, but the idea of I'm exchanging, I'm just trading it. I'm not selling it, realizing gain, buying something else. I'm trading one investment for the other, like-kind property. That's getting in the weeds a little, but that's how they would say it.
I think it was summed up nicely. So, yeah, 1031 exchange, avoid tax avoidance. Again, pitfalls. I always say what could go wrong is you don't have any other liquidity.
Yep.
Right? You have the business or you have the property, but you have no other money, you would have to then fractionalize that conversion versus you put the whole thing, you convert the whole thing. I don't want to pay any taxes, convert the whole thing, 1031 exchange. You still don't have any money. Mm-hmm. How do you live?
Right.
So that's where the balance of life and money comes into play.
And that really ties to if you're that successful business owner along the way, I just see that mentality of rolling everything back into the business. If you're diversifying your assets and you have other assets and a stream of income outside of the business, that also gives you a lot of flexibility at sale time. And that way you also can manage your taxes a little better, a little differently. So it all ties together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, again, you brought up a good point with the business, right? The goal for the business owner should be, how do I extract value from that business into my personal portfolio versus having the business just keep growing and growing and growing in valuation? So you can do it through retirement plans, through your paycheck and so forth, but balancing the tax. But that's a real important piece, is to extracting the value of that business into your personal pockets after taxes.
That seems impossible for so many industries. I think about like real estate.
Okay.
Or rent like collections. Like a brokerage, not real estate and like land. But so let's say you're a broker.
Okay. But
or
then
an appraiser.
So your appraiser, you get fees for your appraisal. You get fees for the brokering of the real estate. So then you just take that in the form of salary. Okay, great. But maybe set up a 401k. Mm-hmm. Set up a profit sharing plan and drawing money out of the business, saving it. And now if the business, think about commercial real estate, it's terrible. Like New York City is awful. Right. People in commercial real estate are struggling there for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And if you had money saved up because you extracted it from your business, mm-hmm. you're good. Should be good to go. You should be okay.
And right? where people get, and you're right. You're yeah. so right. And I'm smiling here because where people get into trouble, and I can't help but pick on our accounting friends again, when everything looks like a nail, you're that hammer. Well, then that's all you do is hammer things. You hammer nails. And if it's taxes and you're an accountant, all you tell somebody is avoid the tax. That may be depreciating something. That may be buying tools you didn't need. What you're saying, Stephen, is pay the taxes. Maybe you put it in a retirement account and defer taxes or avoid them. But at the same time, maybe you are paying yourself a salary. You're saving that money independently outside of the business and investing it. Paying taxes while you're working is not the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. You're building right. your Social Security record for you and your spouse. Mm-hmm. You're building your ability to borrow. You're building your ability to get disability insurance. So many things are tied to having that decent income on a tax return rather than always deducting everything under the sun at the end of the year to avoid that bill. Mm-hmm. And this is where that bracket management can really come into play, doing it the right way mm-hmm. rather than scrambling at the end, having to get, write a surprise check.
You're really putting a positive spin on something that is so looked at so negatively by most of us, really.
What I mean, is what?
The taxation process. Yeah. I mean, there really is a lot of
it's negotiable, right?
You can do.
Right? Everyone hates it, but you can negotiate it and you can navigate your way through it to minimize the pain.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Talk about timing bonuses, stock options, and deferred compensation. So let's say somebody recently received a large bonus through their job and stock options, but aren't sure how to handle the tax implications.
Well, it depends.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You take that one. So, I'll take the first one.
Do they take the bonus now or defer it?
Great question. I'm always one to say take the money. Take the money, please. You never know if that company's changing status, if they rescind it. I mean, we've had people get a job offer and ask, hey, should I still be job shopping? And my answer as a fiduciary is yes, because that job offer could be rescinded. We see it in the news now. So the idea of your family's fiduciary, that's what I would encourage there.
I can go back to story time, going back to the 2008 crisis, somebody working for a major bank and would receive stock bonuses every year, sell the stock, take the compensation, pay your taxes, save your money. He did that year over year, and then 2008 hit. He hit his bonus. He hit the numbers, and the bank said, sorry, we're not paying bonuses this year, and by the way, we're laying everybody off. And the guy's colleague says, what are you going to do with all the stock? Because guess what? The stock was in the tank, mm-hmm. down like 80%. He goes, what stock? I've been selling it all along. So it was a home run. He had no worries.
Wow.
He had all the money in his pocket.
No, but Stephen, all those taxes he paid along the way.
Right, the taxes were horrible. Oh, geez. Oh. Right, yeah.
Wow.
So, So build a financial plan around it. So stock bonuses, looked at it as a form of compensation. Maybe save 10, 20% of it. But again, looking at today's current environment of the volatility of stocks right mm-hmm. now, right? Those who have all these stock options from these companies that are down 20% mm-hmm. in the last 2 months, it's okay.
Yeah.
And this is where, too, the value of an advisor and a team of advisors can really show that merit of, you know what, if I didn't know better and I did it this way, that may result in hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxes, as opposed to having the experience, having some guidance, having someone steer you to what are your goals? What are you trying to do? Let's use this the best way for you rather than what you caught in some article maybe or what everybody thinks you should do. But that customizing the plan to someone and knowing their whole goals, the comprehensive piece, not just taxes, not just the return, but what are we here for? What's the goal? That's how you could use those bonuses, stock options, restricted stock, all of it the best way by working with an advisor to really say, what are my goals right now? Do I need to pay down debt? Do I need to save in my reserve? Do I need more life insurance? You know, each one of those may result in a different move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And deferred comp, you mentioned that one. That's a big one because usually deferred comp plans are for executives, high earners. And a lot of times it's very slippery because a lot of times when you enroll in it is what you're signing up for. And a lot of times people say, I want a full distribution upon separation from service. You're assuming you're going to retire. the company doesn't see it that way. It's when they don't need you anymore. Mm-hmm. And it might be mutual,
good point.
It could be like, you're out the door, buddy. Sorry.
I've had tough times,
right? And then all of a sudden you've got a huge chunk of money coming your way without your control.
Yeah.
And so that's why deferred comps are great. They're a great tool, but it could be your own worst enemy too, because you're it's that greed factor. Let me put it all, as much as I can into a deferred comp. Yeah. And then you do end up getting in a horrible tax situation. Mm-hmm. Even I've seen situations where you sign up for, I'll get the payout over 5 years, payout over 10 years. Then all of a sudden the fine print says separation of service after age 60.
Ooh.
So you're 59 years old, and all of a sudden, after Thanksgiving, company says, well, we're good. I think we're going to terminate your position. We're not firing you. We're going to terminate your position. You're no longer welcome here, right? Right? And it's unfortunate. And then next thing you know, you have a large payout, one lump sum, even though you said, I'm going to defer it over 5 years or 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's real. It happens. So understanding that is important too.
And that mental math, like you're saying, if you see $600,000 in that deferred account, and all of a sudden it's payable in 1 year, that's not $600,000.
It's closer to $450,000,
yeah,
probably.
Exactly. Be mindful of that.
It's a great time to put a pin in the conversation. The moral of the story is: read the fine print, check in with the professionals, the CFPs and the CPAs. To get your tax, your information intact, and make every dollar count, especially at tax time.
Definitely.
That's it for today. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. This was good. We appreciate you tuning in. We hope you'll share with your friends, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.